Mr. Prokhartkin, written by Fyodor Dostoevsky. A Story. In the darkest and humblest corner of Ustinya Fyodorovna's flat lived Semyon Ivanovich Prokhartkin, a well-meaning elderly man who did not drink. Since Mr. Prokhartkin was of a very humble grade in the service and received a salary strictly proportionate to his official capacity, Ustinya Fyodorovna could not get more than 5 rubles a month from him for his lodging. Some people said that she had her own reasons for accepting him as a lodger, but, be that as it may, as though in despite of all his detractors, Mr. Prokhartkin actually became her favourite, in an honourable and virtuous sense, of course. It must be observed that Ustinya Fyodorovna, a very respectable woman who had a special partiality for meat and coffee and found it difficult to keep the fasts, let rooms to several other boarders who paid twice as much as Semyon Ivanovich, yet not being quiet lodgers, but on the contrary all of them spiteful scoffers at her feminine ways and her forlorn helplessness, stood very low in her good opinion, so that if it had not been for the rent they paid, she would not have cared to let them stay, nor indeed to see them in her flat at all. Semyon Ivanovich had become her favourite from the day when a retired, or perhaps more correctly speaking, discharged clerk with a weakness for strong drink was carried to his last resting place in Volkova. Though this gentleman had only one eye, having had the other knocked out, owing, in his own words, to his valiant behaviour, and only one leg, the other having been broken in the same way, owing to his valour, yet he had succeeded in winning all the kindly feeling of which Ustinya Fyodorovna was capable, and took the fullest advantage of it, and would probably have gone on for years, living as her devoted satellite and toady, if he had not finally drunk himself to death in the most pitiable way. All this had happened at Pesky, where Ustinya Fyodorovna only had 3 lodgers, of whom, when she moved into a new flat and set up on a larger scale, letting to about 12 new boarders, Mr. Prokhartkin was the only one who remained. Whether Mr. Prokhartkin had certain incorrigible defects, or whether his companions were, every one of them, to blame, there seemed to be misunderstandings on both sides from the first. We must observe here that all Ustinya Fyodorovna's new lodgers, without exception, got on together like brothers. Some of them were in the same office. Each of them, by turns, lost all his money to the others at faro, preference, and bix. They all liked, in a merry hour, to enjoy what they called the fizzing moments of life in a crowd together. They were fond, too, at times, of discussing lofty subjects, and though in the end things rarely passed off without a dispute, yet as all prejudices were banished from the whole party, the general harmony was not in the least disturbed thereby. The most remarkable among the lodgers were Mark Ivanovich, an intelligent and well-read man, then Oplevaniev, then Prapolovienka, also a nice and modest person. Then there was a certain Zinovy Prokofievich, whose object in life was to get into aristocratic society. Then there was Okyanov, the copying clerk, who had in his time almost wrested the distinction of prime favourite from Semyon Ivanovich, then another copying clerk, called Sudbin, the plebeian Kantaryev. There were others, too. But to all these people, Semyon Ivanovich was, as it were, not one of themselves. No one wished him harm, of course, for all had, from the very first, done Prokhartkin justice, and had decided, in Mark Ivanovich's words, that he, Prokhartkin, was a good and harmless fellow, though by no means a man of the world, trustworthy, and not a flatterer, who had, of course, his failings, but that if he were sometimes unhappy, it was due to nothing else but lack of imagination. What is more, Mr. Prokhartkin, though deprived in this way of imagination, could never have made a particularly favourable impression from his figure or manners, upon which scoffers are fond of fastening. yet his figure did not put people against him. Mark Ivanovich, who was an intelligent person, formally undertook Semyon Ivanovich's defence, and declared in rather happy and flowery language that Prohartchin was an elderly and respectable man who had long ago passed the age of romance, and so if Semyon Ivanovich did not know how to get on with people, it must have been entirely his own fault. The first thing they noticed was the unmistakable parsimony and niggardliness of Semyon Ivanovich. That was at once observed and noted, for Semyon Ivanovich would never lend anyone his teapot, even for a moment, and that was the more unjust, as he himself hardly ever drank tea, but when he wanted anything drank, as a rule, had a rather pleasant decoction of wild flowers and certain medicinal herbs, of which he always had a considerable store. His meals, too, were quite different from the other lodgers. He never, for instance, permitted himself to partake of the whole dinner provided daily by Ustinya Fyodorovna for the other boarders. The dinner cost half a rouble. Semyon Ivanovich paid only 25 kopecks in copper and never exceeded it, and so took either a plate of soup with pie or a plate of beef. Most frequently he ate neither soup nor beef, but he partook in moderation of white bread with onion, curd, salted cucumber or something similar, which was a great deal cheaper, and he would only go back to his half-rouble dinner when he could stand it no longer. Here the biographer confesses that nothing would have induced him to allude to such realistic and low details, positively shocking and offensive to some lovers of the heroic style, if it were not that these details exhibit one peculiarity, one characteristic in the hero of this story. For Mr. Prohartchin was by no means so poor as to be unable to have regular and sufficient meals, though he sometimes made out that he was. But he acted as he did regardless of obloquy and people's prejudices, simply to satisfy his strange whims, and from frugality and excessive carefulness. All this, however, will be much clearer later on, but we will beware of boring the listener with the description of all Semyon Ivanovich's whims, and will omit, for instance, the curious and very amusing description of his attire, and, in fact, if it were not for Ustinya Fyodorovna's own reference to it, we should hardly have alluded even to the fact that Semyon Ivanovich never could make up his mind to send his linen to the wash, or if he ever did so, it was so rarely that in the intervals one might have completely forgotten the existence of linen on Semyon Ivanovich. From the landlady's evidence, it appeared that Semyon Ivanovich, bless his soul, poor lamb, for 20 years had been tucked away in his corner, without caring what folks thought. For all the days of his life on earth he was a stranger to socks, handkerchiefs, and all such things. And what is more, Ustinya Fyodorovna had seen with her own eyes, thanks to the decrepitude of the screen, that the poor dear man sometimes had had nothing to cover his bare skin. Such were the rumours in circulation after Semyon Ivanovich's death. But in his lifetime, and this was one of the most frequent occasions of dissension, he could not endure it if anyone, even somebody on friendly terms with him, poked his inquisitive nose uninvited into his corner, even through an aperture in the decrepit screen. He was a taciturn man, difficult to deal with, and prone to ill health. He did not like people to give him advice. He did not care for people who put themselves forward either. And if anyone jeered at him or gave him advice unasked, he would fall foul of him at once, put him to shame, and settle his business. "You are a puppy. You are a featherhead. You are not one to give advice. So there. You mind your own business, sir. You'd better count the stitches in your own socks, sir. So there." Semyon Ivanovich was a plain man, and never used the formal mode of address to anyone. He could not bear it either when someone who knew his little ways would begin from pure sport pestering him with questions, such as what he had in his little trunk. Semyon Ivanovich had one little trunk. It stood under his bed, and was guarded like the apple of his eye, and though everyone knew that there was nothing in it except old rags, two or three pairs of damaged boots, and all sorts of rubbish, yet Mr. Prokhorchin prized his property very highly, and they used even to hear him at one time express dissatisfaction with his old but still sound lock, and talk of getting a new one of a special German pattern, with a secret spring and various complications. When on one occasion Zinovy Prokofievitch, carried away by the thoughtlessness of youth, gave expression to the very coarse and unseemly idea that Semyon Ivanovitch was probably hiding and treasuring something in his box to leave to his descendants, everyone who happened to be by was stupefied at the extraordinary effects of Zinovy Prokofievitch's sally. At first, Mr. Prokhorchin could not find suitable terms for such a crude and coarse idea. For a long time, words dropped from his lips quite incoherently. It was only after a while that they made out that Semyon Ivanovitch was reproaching Zinovy Prokofievitch for some shabby action in the remote past. Then they realized that Semyon Ivanovitch was predicting that Zinovy Prokofievitch would never get into aristocratic society, and that the tailor to whom he owed a bill for his suits would beat him, would certainly beat him, because the puppy had not paid him for so long. And finally, "Yo, puppy, yo," Semyon Ivanovitch added. "Here you want to get into the hussars, but you won't, I tell you. You'll make a fool of yourself. And then I'll tell you what, you puppy, when your superiors know all about it, they will take you and make you a copying clerk, so that will be the end of it. Do you hear, puppy?" Then Semyon Ivanovitch subsided, but after lying down for 5 hours, to the intense astonishment of everyone, he seemed to have reached a decision, and began suddenly reproaching and abusing the young man again, at first to himself, and afterwards addressing Zinovy Prokofievitch. But the matter did not end there, and in the evening, when Mark Ivanovitch and Prepolivienka made tea and asked Okyanov to drink it with them, Semyon Ivanovitch got up from his bed, purposely joined them, subscribing his 15 or 20 kopecks, and, on the pretext of a sudden desire for a cup of tea, began at great length going into the subject, and explaining that he was a poor man, nothing but a poor man, and that a poor man like him had nothing to save. Mr. Prokhorchin confessed that he was a poor man on this occasion. He said, simply because the subject had come up, that the day before yesterday he had meant to borrow a rouble from that imprudent fellow, but now he should not borrow it, for fear the puppy should brag, that was the fact of the matter, and that his salary was such that one could not buy enough to eat, and that finally, a poor man, as you see, he sent his sister-in-law in Tver 5 rubles every month, that if he did not send his sister-in-law in Tver 5 rubles every month, his sister-in-law would die. And if his sister-in-law, who was dependent on him, were dead, he, Semyon Ivanovitch, would long ago have bought himself a new suit. And Semyon Ivanovitch went on talking in this way at great length about being a poor man, about his sister-in-law, and about rubles, and kept repeating the same thing over and over again to impress it on his audience till he got into a regular muddle and relapsed into silence. Only 3 days later, when they had all forgotten about him, and no one was thinking of attacking him, he added something in conclusion to the effect that when Zinovy Prokofievitch went into the hussars, the impudent fellow would have his leg cut off in the war, and then he would come with a wooden leg and say, "Semyon Ivanovitch, kind friend, give me something to eat." And then Semyon Ivanovitch would not give him something to eat, and would not look at the insolent fellow. And that's how it would be, and he could just make the best of it. All this naturally seemed very curious, and at the same time fearfully amusing. Without much reflection, all the lodgers joined together for further investigation, and simply from curiosity, determined to make a final onslaught on Semyon Ivanovitch en masse. and as Mr. Prohartchin too had of late, that is, ever since he had begun living in the same flat with them, been very fond of finding out everything about them and asking inquisitive questions, probably for private reasons of his own, relations sprang up between the opposed parties without any preparation or effort on either side, as it were by chance and of itself. To get into relations, Semyon Ivanovitch always had in reserve his peculiar, rather sly and very ingenuous manoeuvre, of which the listener has learned something already. He would get off his bed about tea-time, and if he saw the others gathered together in a group to make tea, he would go up to them like a quiet, sensible, and friendly person, hand over his 20 kopecks, as he was entitled to do, and announce that he wished to join them. Then the young men would wink at one another, and so, indicating that they were in league together against Semyon Ivanovitch, would begin a conversation, at first strictly proper and decorous. Then one of the wittier of the party would, apropos of nothing, fall to telling them news consisting most usually of entirely false and quite incredible details. He would say, for instance, that someone had heard His Excellency that day telling Demit Vasilievich that in his opinion married clerks were more trustworthy than unmarried and more suitable for promotion, for they were steady, and that their capacities were considerably improved by marriage, and that therefore he, that is the speaker, in order to improve and be better fitted for promotion, was doing his utmost to enter the bonds of matrimony as soon as possible with a certain Fevronia Prokofievna. Or he would say that it had more than once been remarked about certain of his colleagues that they were entirely devoid of social graces and of well-bred, agreeable manners, and consequently unable to please ladies in good society, and that, therefore, to eradicate this defect, it would be suitable to deduct something from their salary, and with the sum so obtained, to hire a hall, where they could learn to dance, acquire the outward signs of gentlemanliness and good breeding, courtesy, respect for their seniors, strength of will, a good and grateful heart, and various agreeable qualities. Or he would say that it was being arranged that some of the clerks, beginning with the most elderly, were to be put through an examination in all sorts of subjects to raise their standard of culture, and in that way, the speaker would add, all sorts of things would come to light, and certain gentlemen would have to lay their cards on the table. In short, thousands of similar very absurd rumours were discussed. To keep it up, everyone believed the story at once, showing interest in it, asked questions, applied it to themselves, and some of them, assuming a despondent air, began shaking their heads and asking everyone's advice, saying what were they to do if they were to come under it. It need hardly be said that a man far less credulous and simple-hearted than Mr. Prohartchin would have been puzzled and carried away by a rumour so unanimously believed. Moreover, from all appearances, it might be safely concluded that Semyon Ivanovitch was exceedingly stupid and slow to grasp any new unusual idea, and that when he heard anything new, he had always first, as it were, to chew it over and digest it to find out the meaning, and, struggling with it in bewilderment, at last perhaps to overcome it, though even then in a quite special manner peculiar to himself alone. In this way, curious and hitherto unexpected qualities began to show themselves in Semyon Ivanovitch. Talk and tittle-tattle followed, and by devious ways it all reached the office at last, with additions. What increased the sensation was the fact that Mr. Prohartchin, who had looked almost exactly the same from time immemorial, suddenly, apropos of nothing, wore quite a different countenance. His face was uneasy. His eyes were timid and had a scared and rather suspicious expression. He took to walking softly, starting and listening, and to put the finishing touch to his new characteristics, developed a passion for investigating the truth. He carried his love of truth at last to such a pitch as to venture on two occasions to inquire of Demid Vasilievich himself concerning the credibility of the strange rumours that reached him daily by dozens, and if we say nothing here of the consequence of the action of Semyon Ivanovitch, it is for no other reason but a sensitive regard for his reputation. It was in this way people came to consider him as misanthropic and regardless of the proprieties. Then they began to discover that there was a great deal that was fantastical about him, and in this they were not altogether mistaken, for it was observed on more than one occasion that Semyon Ivanovitch completely forgot himself, and, sitting in his seat with his mouth open and his pen in the air, as though frozen or petrified, looked more like the shadow of a rational being than the rational being itself. It sometimes happened that some innocently gaping gentleman, on suddenly catching his straying, lustreless, questioning eyes, was scared and all of a tremor, and at once inserted into some important document either a smudge or some quite inappropriate word. The impropriety of Semyon Ivanovitch's behaviour embarrassed and annoyed all really well-bred people. At last, no one could feel any doubt of the eccentricity of Semyon Ivanovitch's mind. When one fine morning the rumour was all over the office that Mr. Proharchin had actually frightened Demid Vasilievich himself, for meeting him in the corridor, Semyon Ivanovitch had been so strange and peculiar that he had forced his superior to beat a retreat. The news of Semyon Ivanovitch's behaviour reached him himself at last. Hearing of it, he got up at once, made his way carefully between the chairs and tables, reached the entry, took down his overcoat with his own hand, put it on, went out, and disappeared for an indefinite period. Whether he was led into this by alarm or some other impulse, we cannot say, but no trace was seen of him for a time, either at home or at the office. We will not attribute Semyon Ivanovitch's fate simply to his eccentricity, yet we must observe to the listener that our hero was a very retiring man, unaccustomed to society, and had, until he made the acquaintance of the new lodgers, lived in complete unbroken solitude, and had been marked by his quietness and even a certain mysteriousness, for he had spent all the time that he lodged at Pesky lying on his bed behind the screen, without talking to or having any sort of relations with anyone. Both his old fellow lodgers lived exactly as he did. They, too, were somehow mysterious people, and spent 15 years lying behind their screens. The happy, drowsy hours and days trailed by, one after the other, in patriarchal stagnation, and as everything around them went its way in the same happy fashion, neither Semyon Ivanovitch nor Ustinya Fyodorovna could remember exactly when fate had brought them together. "It may be 10 years, it may be 20, it may be even 25 altogether," she would say at times to her new lodgers, "since he settled with me. Poor dear man, bless his heart." And so it was very natural that the hero of our story, being so unaccustomed to society, was disagreeably surprised when, a year before, he, a respectable and modest man, had found himself suddenly in the midst of a noisy and boisterous crew, consisting of a dozen young fellows, his colleagues at the office, and his new housemates. The disappearance of Semyon Ivanovitch made no little stir in the lodgings. One thing was that he was the favourite, another that his passport, which had been in the landlady's keeping, appeared to have been accidentally mislaid. Ustinya Fyodorovna raised a howl, as was her invariable habit on all critical occasions. She spent 2 days in abusing and upbraiding the lodgers. She wailed that they had chased away her lodger like a chicken, and all those spiteful scoffers had been the ruin of him. And on the third day she sent them all out to hunt for the fugitive, and at all costs to bring him back, dead or alive. Towards evening, Sudbin first came back with the news that traces had been discovered, that he had himself seen the runaway in Tolkuchi Market and other places, had followed and stood close to him, but had not dared to speak to him. He had been near him in a crowd watching a house on fire in Crooked Lane. Half an hour later, Okyanov and Kantarev came in and confirmed Sudbin's story word for word. They, too, had stood near, had followed him quite close, had stood not more than 10 paces from him, but they also had not ventured to speak to him. But both observed that Semyon Ivanovitch was walking with a drunken cadger. The other lodgers were all back and together at last, and, after listening attentively, they made up their minds that Prohartchin could not be far off, and would not be long in returning. But they said that they had all known beforehand that he was about with a drunken cadger. This drunken cadger was a thoroughly bad lot, insolent and cringing, and it seemed evident that he had got round Semyon Ivanovitch in some way. He had turned up just a week before Semyon Ivanovitch's disappearance in company with Remnyov, had spent a little time in the flat telling them that he had suffered in the cause of justice, that he had formerly been in the service in the provinces, that an inspector had come down on them, that he and his associates had somehow suffered in a good cause, that he had come to Petersburg and fallen at the feet of Porfiry Grigorievich, that he had been got by interest into a department, but through the cruel persecution of fate he had been discharged from there too, and that afterwards, through reorganization, the office itself had ceased to exist, and that he had not been included in the new revised staff of clerks, owing as much to direct incapacity for official work as to capacity for something else quite irrelevant. All this mixed up with his passion for justice, and, of course, the trickery of his enemies. After finishing his story, in the course of which Mr. Zimovekin more than once kissed his sullen and unshaven friend Remnyov, he bowed down to all in the room in turn, not forgetting Avdotya the servant, called them all his benefactors, and explained that he was an undeserving, troublesome, mean, insolent, and stupid man, and that good people must not be hard on his pitiful plight and simplicity. After begging for their kind protection, Mr. Zimovekin showed his livelier side, grew very cheerful, kissed Ustinya Fyodorovna's hands, in spite of her modest protests that her hand was coarse and not like a lady's, and towards evening promised to show the company his talent in a remarkable character dance. But next day his visit ended in lamentable denouement, either because there had been too much character in the character dance, or because he had, in Ustinya Fyodorovna's own words, somehow insulted her and treated her as no lady, though she was on friendly terms with Yaroslav Ilyich himself, and if she liked, might long ago have been an officer's wife. Zimovekin had to steer for home next day. He went away, came back again, was again turned out with ignominy, then wormed his way into Semyon Ivanovitch's good graces, robbed him, incidentally, of his new breeches, and now it appeared he had led Semyon Ivanovitch astray. As soon as the landlady knew that Semyon Ivanovitch was alive and well, and that there was no need to hunt for his passport, she promptly left off grieving and was pacified. Meanwhile, some of the lodgers determined to give the runaway a triumphal reception. They broke the bolt and moved away the screen from Mr. Prohartchin's bed, rumpled up the bed a little, took the famous box, put it at the foot of the bed, and on the bed laid the sister-in-law, that is, a dummy made up of an old kerchief, a cap, and a mantle of the landlady's, such an exact counterfeit of a sister-in-law that it might have been mistaken for one. Having finished their work, they waited for Semyon Ivanovitch to return, meaning to tell him that his sister-in-law had arrived from the country and was there behind his screen. Poor thing. But they waited and waited. Already, while they waited, Mark Ivanovitch had staked and lost half a month's salary to Prepolovyenka and Kantarev. Already, Okyanov's nose had grown red and swollen, playing flips on the nose and three cards. Already, Avdotya the servant had almost had her sleep out and had twice been on the point of getting up to fetch the wood and light the stove. And Zinovy Prokofievitch, who kept running out every minute to see whether Semyon Ivanovitch were coming, was wet to the skin. But there was no sign of anyone yet, neither Semyon Ivanovitch nor the drunken Kadja. At last, everyone went to bed, leaving the sister-in-law behind the screen in readiness for any emergency. And it was not till 4 o'clock that a knock was heard at the gate. But when it did come, it was so loud that it quite made up to the expectant lodgers for all the wearisome trouble they had been through. It was he himself, Semyon Ivanovitch, Mr. Prokharchin, but in such a condition that they all cried out in dismay, and no one thought about the sister-in-law. The lost man was unconscious. He was brought in, or more correctly carried in, by a sopping and tattered night cabman. To the landlady's question where the poor dear man had got so groggy, the cabman answered, "Why, he is not drunk, and has not had a drop, that I can tell you for sure. But seemingly a faintness has come over him, or some sort of fit, or maybe he's been knocked down by a blow." They began examining him, propping the culprit against the stove to do so more conveniently, and saw that it really was not a case of drunkenness, nor had he had a blow, but that something else was wrong. For Semyon Ivanovitch could not utter a word, but seemed twitching in a sort of convulsion, and only blinked, fixing his eyes in bewilderment first on one and then on another of the spectators, who were all attired in night array. Then they began questioning the cabman, asking where he had got him from.
"Why, from folks out Kolomna way," he answered. "Deuce knows what they are. Not exactly gentry, but merry, rollicking gentlemen. So he was like this when they gave him to me. Whether they had been fighting, or whether he was in some sort of fit, goodness knows what it was, but they were nice, jolly gentlemen."
Semyon Ivanovitch was taken, lifted high on the shoulders of two or three sturdy fellows, and carried to his bed. When Semyon Ivanovitch, on being put in bed, felt the sister-in-law and put his feet on his sacred box, he cried out at the top of his voice, squatted up almost on his heels, and, trembling and shaking all over, with his hands and body, he cleared a space as far as he could in his bed, while gazing with a tremulous but strangely resolute look at those present. He seemed as if it were to protest that he would sooner die than give up the 100th part of his poor belongings to anyone. Semyon Ivanovitch lay for 2 or 3 days closely barricaded by the screen, and so cut off from all the world and all its vain anxieties. Next morning, of course, everyone had forgotten about him. Time, meanwhile, flew by as usual. Hour followed hour, and day followed day. The sick man's heavy, feverish brain was plunged in something between sleep and delirium, but he lay quietly and did not moan or complain. On the contrary, he kept still and silent and controlled himself, lying low in his bed, just as the hare lies close to the earth when it hears the hunter. At times, a long, depressing stillness prevailed in the flat, a sign that the lodgers had all gone to the office, and Semyon Ivanovitch, waking up, could relieve his depression by listening to the bustle in the kitchen, where the landlady was busy close by, or to the regular flop of Avdotya's downtrodden slippers, as, sighing and moaning, she cleared away, rubbed and polished, tidying all the rooms in the flat. Whole hours passed by in that way, drowsy, languid, sleepy, wearisome, like the water that dripped with a regular sound from the locker into the basin in the kitchen. At last the lodgers would arrive, one by one or in groups, and Semyon Ivanovitch could very conveniently hear them abusing the weather, saying they were hungry, making a noise, smoking, quarrelling and making friends, playing cards and clattering the cups as they got ready for tea. Semyon Ivanovitch mechanically made an effort to get up and join them, as he had a right to do at tea, but he at once sank back into drowsiness and dreamed that he had been sitting a long time at the tea-table, having tea with them and talking, and that Zinovy Prokofievitch had already seized the opportunity to introduce into the conversation some scheme concerning sisters-in-law and the moral relation of various worthy men to them. At this point, Semyon Ivanovitch was in haste to defend himself and reply, but the mighty formula that flew from every tongue, "It has more than once been observed," cut short all his objections, and Semyon Ivanovitch could do nothing better than begin dreaming again that today was the first of the month and that he was receiving money in his office. Undoing the paper round it on the stairs, he looked about him quickly and made haste as fast as he could to subtract half of the lawful wages he had received and conceal it in his boot. Then, on the spot, on the stairs, quite regardless of the fact that he was in bed and asleep, he made up his mind, when he reached home, to give his landlady what was due for board and lodging, then to buy certain necessities, and to show anyone it might concern, as it were, casually and unintentionally, that some of his salary had been deducted, that now he had nothing left to send his sister-in-law, then to speak with commiseration of his sister-in-law, to say a great deal about her the next day and the day after, and 10 days later to say something casually again about her poverty that his companions might not forget. Making this determination, he observed that Andrei Yefimovitch, that everlastingly silent, bald little man who sat in the office 3 rooms from where Semyon Ivanovitch sat and hadn't said a word to him for 20 years, was standing on the stairs, that he too was counting his silver rubles and shaking his head. He said to him, "Money." "If there's no money, there will be no porridge," he added grimly, as he went down the stairs, and, just at the door, he ended, "And I have 7 children, sir." Then the little bald man, probably equally unconscious that he was acting as a phantom and not as a substantial reality, held up his hand about 30 inches from the floor and, waving it vertically, muttered that the eldest was going to school, then glancing with indignation at Semyon Ivanovitch, as though it were Mr. Prokhorchin's fault that he was the father of 7, pulled his old hat down over his eyes, and, with a whisk of his overcoat, he turned to the left and disappeared. Semyon Ivanovitch was quite frightened, and though he was fully convinced of his own innocence in regard to the unpleasant accumulation of 7 under 1 roof, yet it seemed to appear that, in fact, no one else was to blame but Semyon Ivanovitch. Panic-stricken, he set off running, for it seemed to him that the bald gentleman had turned back, was running after him, and meant to search him and take away all his salary, insisting upon the indisputable number 7, and resolutely denying any possible claim of any sort of sisters-in-law upon Semyon Ivanovitch. Prokhorchin ran and ran, gasping for breath. Beside him was running, too, an immense number of people, and all of them were jingling their money in the tail pockets of their skimpy little dress coats. At last, everyone ran up. There was the noise of fire engines, and whole masses of people carried him almost on their shoulders up to that same house on fire which he had watched last time in company with the drunken cadger. The drunken cadger, alias Mr. Zimovakin, was there now too. He met Semyon Ivanovitch, made a fearful fuss, took him by the arm, and led him into the thickest part of the crowd. Just as then, in reality, all about them was the noise and uproar of an immense crowd of people flooding the whole of Fontanka embankment between the 2 bridges, as well as all the surrounding streets and alleys. Just as then, Semyon Ivanovitch, in company with the drunken cadger, was carried along behind a fence, where they were squeezed as though in pincers into a huge timber yard full of spectators who had gathered from the street from Tolkachi Market and from all the surrounding houses, taverns, and restaurants. Semyon Ivanovitch saw all this, and felt as he had done at the time. In the whirl of fever and delirium, all sorts of strange figures began flitting before him. He remembered some of them. One of them was a gentleman who had impressed everyone extremely, a man 7 feet high, with whiskers half a yard long, who had been standing behind Semyon Ivanovitch's back during the fire and had given him encouragement from behind, when our hero had felt something like ecstasy and had stamped as though intending thereby to applaud the gallant work of the firemen, from which he had an excellent view from his elevated position. Another was the sturdy lad from whom our hero had received a shove by way of a lift onto another fence when he had been disposed to climb over it, possibly to save someone. He had a glimpse, too, of the figure of the old man with a sickly face in an old wadded dressing gown tied round the waist, who had made his appearance before the fire in a little shop buying sugar and tobacco for his lodger, and who now, with a milk can and a quart pot in his hands, made his way through the crowd to the house in which his wife and daughter were burning together with 13.5 roubles in the corner under the bed. But most distinct of all was the poor, sinful woman of whom he had dreamed more than once during his illness. She stood before him now as she had done then, in wretched bark shoes and rags, with a crutch and a wicker basket on her back. She was shouting more loudly than the firemen or the crowd, waving her crutch and her arms, saying that her own children had turned her out, and that she had lost 2 coppers in consequence. The children and the coppers and the children, were mingled together in an utterly incomprehensible muddle, from which everyone withdrew baffled, after vain efforts to understand. But the woman would not desist. She kept wailing, shouting, and waving her arms, seeming to pay no attention either to the fire up to which she had been carried by the crowd from the street, or to the people about her, or to the misfortune of strangers, or even to the sparks and red-hot embers which were beginning to fall in showers on the crowd standing near. At last, Mr. Prokhartchin felt that a feeling of terror was coming upon him, for he saw clearly that all this was not, so to say, an accident, and that he would not get off scot-free. And indeed, upon the woodstack close to him was a peasant in a torn smock that hung loose about him, with his hair and beard singed, and he began stirring up all the people against Semyon Ivanovitch. The crowd pressed closer and closer. The peasant shouted, and, foaming at the mouth with horror, Mr. Prokhartchin suddenly realized that this peasant was a cabman whom he had cheated 5 years before in the most inhuman way, slipping away from him without paying through a side gate and jerking up his heels as he ran as though he were barefoot on hot bricks. In despair, Mr. Prokhartchin tried to speak, to scream, but his voice failed him. He felt that the infuriated crowd was twining round him like a many-coloured snake, strangling him, crushing him. He made an incredible effort and awoke. Then he saw that he was on fire, that all his corner was on fire, that his screen was on fire, that the whole flat was on fire, together with Ustinya Fyodorovna and all her lodgers, that his bed was burning, his pillow, his quilt, his box, and last of all, his precious mattress. Semyon Ivanovitch jumped up, clutched at the mattress, and ran, dragging it after him. But in the landlady's room into which, regardless of decorum, our hero ran just as he was, barefoot and in his shirt, he was seized, held tight, and triumphantly carried back behind the screen, which, meanwhile, was not on fire. It seemed that it was rather Semyon Ivanovitch's head that was on fire, and was put back to bed. It was just as some tattered, unshaven, ill-humoured organ-grinder puts away in his travelling box the Punch who has been making an upset, drubbing all the other puppets, selling his soul to the devil, and who at last ends his existence till the next performance in the same box with the devil, the negroes, the Pierrot, and Mademoiselle Caterina with her fortunate lover, the captain.